I know. If you're complaining, get over it, because it's Olivia Newton-John for the rest of the morning. So just join us and enjoy the ride. This is Up North News. I'm Pat Kreitlow, and I'm joined now by Professor and Director of Graduate Studies Michael Wagner. He's with the UW-Madison School of Journalism and Mass Communications. And I really like the fact that his bio through the university leads with this. His research, teaching, and service are animated by the question, how well does democracy work? And that is extremely relevant more than ever these days. But, I mean, it always has been for anybody who is concerned about, you know, the state of journalism at any given point in history. You know, you have to ask yourself, is it finding that right balance between information and entertainment? And it's been that way since, you know, the very beginning. And so the fact that Professor Wagner is willing to do that with us for a few minutes is greatly appreciated. Mike, it's good to have you here. Thank you.
Great to be here.
I'm just going to pick up where we left off before the break here, simply because it is, again, as journalism and its offshoots like social media, you know, enter the discourse, almost anything is going to come up. And we were talking about the dark Brandon memes, you know, that people are talking about now, the way that we animate our presidents, we turn them into celebrities. And journalism, you know, either you can either argue from John F. Kennedy on, if not sooner, can't avoid doing that as well. Is it your feeling that we reached any kind of a tipping point with the way that journalism covered Donald Trump, or is this going to be looked back as merely one more bump, but certainly a large bump in journalism's self-examination of how it covers democracy?
You know, I think we often have a pattern in journalism where a new thing comes along, like Barack Obama, you know, in 2004 at the Democratic National Convention, and then 2008 when he ran for president, or Ronald Reagan when he first ran unsuccessfully in the 70s and then successfully in the 80s, and then Donald Trump now, where there's a new kind of candidate who communicates in a new way. As you mentioned, JFK, you know, similar in that regard. And then that person gets a ton of oxygen and gets a lot of news attention. And then after the giving of all of that attention, there is a self-examination phase, a little bit of media hand-wringing, oh, maybe we shouldn't have done this or shouldn't have done that. And we see that kind of amplified times 1,000, I think, with former President Trump. He got so much more attention than all of the other people he was running against in the Republican primary in 2016. He got so much more attention and coverage than Hillary Clinton in 2020. So much more attention running for re-election or against Hillary in 16, and so much more in 2020. And so the outsized nature of the spotlight's focus on Trump is pretty unique. And is something that some news outlets have made some decisions to pay less attention to what he's done since leaving office, and others have paid more attention. Like, one thing that's changed, if we start from Kennedy to now, is that when Kennedy came on the scene as the telegenic candidate for office, there were, you know, a couple of two, three television stations, right? And hometown newspapers, and that was it. And if you wanted the TV on at your house at night at 5:30, the news was on all three channels, whereas that's just not how, you know, the world works now. And so not only is there this incredibly fractured media environment, there's also way more opportunities for folks like Trump to get attention. And it's just harder to get attention when there's different and more sources. And, you know, one of Trump's great strengths was focusing attention on him.
No doubt about that. I mean, that if there's one thing that he is especially good at, it's narcissism. And it reminds me, and I apologize, I could be wrong, but if memory serves, back to John F. Kennedy in 1960, the newspaper editorials, by and large, favored then Vice President Nixon. But, you know, Kennedy had so much more appeal for being telegenic and everything. In much the same way in 2016, Donald Trump could point to maybe one newspaper editorial that was for him. But again, he got all of the attention on TV, and it just tells you so much about the power of the medium that continues to this day.
Attention is a really valuable resource, especially in this day and age, when at any time I could just start looking at my phone and get lost in that instead of whatever it is I'm supposed to be doing with another human being, right? And so it's just really hard to sustain attention. And Trump is really, really good at pulling attention. And he's sort of a flame, and journalists are often moths just attracted to that light and that constant demand for provocative attention that he gives, right? And that's different than the Kennedy era or the Reagan era or the Obama era, where these folks were all operating within a set of norms about, well, we have some things we can say and some things we can't. If we say things that aren't true and we get called out, we'll stop saying those things and move on to something else. That's just not how Trump operates. Trump continues to say whatever he wants and has no connection to whether that thing is true or not. It's just connected to whether he thinks it's good for him in the moment he's in.
I mean, it really is. From a century ago, the P.T. Barnum school of there's almost no such thing as bad attention.
Especially when he first came on the scene in 2016, right? He's running against Scott Walker, Jeb Bush, John Kasich. All of these people could say, I won a statewide election in a swing state. I've been a chief executive of an important state. How does a political novice who's famous for pretend firing people on a television show win that nomination? And it's by sucking up all of the oxygen and getting all of the attention. He got billions of dollars worth of free news coverage, whereas all of the other candidates got hardly anything. And it just made it impossible for them to differentiate themselves. How does Scott Walker differentiate himself from Jeb Bush or John Kasich when they get no attention at all? Whereas Trump could say, all these people are bought and sold by the same people. They're bought and sold by people like me. I'm rich. I can't be bought. Vote for me, and it was just a kind of a perfect storm of his incredible ability to focus attention and the Republican Party's refusal to coalesce around one other person to be the opponent against him in that primary. And then he, of course, once you become president, then you're the human starting gun and you get all the attention regardless of who you are.
UW Journalism and Mass Communications Professor Michael Wagner is joining us here in this hour to talk a bit about journalism and democracy. One thing that we have not talked about yet is slant or bias in this. And I tried to make this clear to people back when I was anchoring the news at Channel 13 in Eau Claire for all those years, and they'd accuse us of bias and or slanting things. I'd say, no, that is a school of thought. But then the other thing to keep in mind is that newsrooms don't make decisions based on politics so much as they make it based on metrics, ratings, engagement, eyeballs, circulation. And again, they shouldn't be driven by that necessarily, but you can't not be. And that newsrooms often make decisions on whether something will, hold interest rather than is it the most important thing that we can tell people about in, the limited time that we're going to have the viewer or the reader's attention. At least that was the excuse I was giving people all those years. Maybe I was wrong.
I think that there's something to that, right? I think most news, especially like local television and local newspapers, they have no interest. There's no economic interest in being biased to one side because you alienate half of your audience, especially in a state like Wisconsin, where most elections are a coin flip. If you're consistently biased to one side or the other, half of the audience isn't going to trust you. And so there's no incentive to be ideologically biased as a local television station or newspaper. The incentive is to hold attention, to get eyeballs, to get people to come back, to get people to engage with the advertisers, those sorts of things, which tend to mean covering politics as a game, covering the horse race, who's winning the polls rather than whose ideas are most likely to work, and those sorts of things, which tend to treat politics more like a contest than what politics is really about, which is for power. Who gets what, when, and how? That's what politics is about. And too much of news coverage is about who's winning and why, rather than who's delivering on their promises or who's not delivering on their promises.
And we have hyped even that up to an even higher degree in the social media era, because in let's say in TV or a newspaper, you have a finite 30-minute newscast or a newspaper that's a section that let's say is roughly 12 pages. You can play with it a bit, but what you were looking for in that relatively finite space was the mix of stories. Some places were if it bleeds, it leads, because they knew crime would hold attention, and others made other decisions. In the social media era, it has nothing to do, or much less to do, with the mix of what all you cover. It is on a story by story, a post by post basis of you know, what people like to say is stop the scroll. You know, you're scrolling your phone, you're scrolling, and what's going to make you stop? And so whether it's that TikTok or Instagram reel, does it get you within the first 2 seconds, or does that social media post grab you? You may not know anything else that newsroom is covering that day, but there is more pressure than ever now to make sure that each and every output that you do can grab the viewer, and hopefully do so, you know, without crossing some kind of a line, whether it's sensationalism, ethics, or what have you.
We're really asking a lot of journalists in this era. We have smaller and smaller newsrooms, fewer and fewer journalists assigned to cover civic events, civic engagement, politics. And then we say, okay, so when you do it, make it so emotional and so compelling that, as you say, people stop the scroll, right? We need really compelling video. We need a provocative tweet. We need a provocative Facebook post. We need something on Instagram that's going to get people to stop and pay attention to what it is we're doing. And you need to write more stories a day than you used to because we have fewer reporters in the newsroom. And we're going to add a 4 o'clock newscast. So not only are we covering more stories, we're covering more versions of them, but they all need to be provocative. They all need to be emotional, which gives journalists very little time to do the kind of work that maybe they got into the business for in the first place, which is to hold power to account, to tell stories that matter to the audience. And instead, they're trying to find things that will be interesting to the audience, which overlaps with what matters, but isn't the same thing as what matters.
Exactly. We've got about 2 minutes before we take a break here, and I wanted to at least get an introduction to something you're doing with faculty and graduate student members of the Civic Culture and Contentious Political Group at UW-Madison. You are completing a construction of the Wisconsin media ecology in the 21st century in order to understand how Wisconsin politics has arrived at the state in which it currently finds itself. Sir, good luck to you. How's that going?
It's been a really exciting and fun project. We just published a book called Battleground about Wisconsin and its communication ecology and the maybe the last decade or so of Wisconsin politics, where we've understood where people watch news on television, read the paper, what radio stations they listen to, who they talk to as regular humans about politics, the social media they engage with. And we've done these huge content analyses of conversation about Wisconsin politics on Twitter, conversation amongst individuals, what's covered in newspapers, what's covered on television, to find what things overlap, what things don't, and how they relate to huge issues in our state like healthcare, immigration, and economic development. And so it's been a process of survey research, social media research, one-on-one and focus group interviews throughout all the corners of the state over the past decade. It's been really rewarding. We've learned a ton about our state in that process.
Are you able to stay for another segment here and talk a bit more about that and other headlines? Appreciate that very much. Michael Wagner is joining us, and we will talk more about journalism and democracy, especially how you can even take inventory of what all we have out here. You're no longer just measuring, you know, 3 TV stations and, you know, maybe 2 newspapers in a city. There is so much more and such a wide range of experience by journalists in Wisconsin. So we'll talk a bit more about that on this primary election day. Get out and vote. Polls are open until 8. This is Up North News. I'm Pat Kreitlow. We'll be right back.